Hey, small business owners. Have your sales gone up, but your bank account doesn't? Has getting to know your numbers been on your to-do list for a while? Let's face it, you're good at doing the work in your business, but the money is hard. Have you noticed that by the time you pay your bills and pay everyone else each month, there's just not that much left for you? It's just not fair. As a business owner, you know you deserve to be getting paid more than you are, but you just can't seem to figure out where all the money went. What if there was another way? What if there was a way to tell your money where to go instead of wondering where it went? What if you had money in your bank account at the end of the month to show for all your hard work? Well, this is the sign you've been looking for, that you're not alone and help is just a call away. The team at Likes Accounting prides themselves on being financial translators that can help you find smarter ways to make money, save money, and finally start paying yourself a salary that you deserve. Working with Likes Accounting not only helps you know your numbers, but they're cheerleaders helping you build a more profitable lifestyle business. The team at Likes Accounting aren't just a bunch of numbers nerds. They're all self-employed experts with experience in your industry. Megan, the owner, is not only fun, easy to understand, and crazy smart. She's even a CPA. Tech to CEO listeners get a free review of their QuickBooks online when they mention this podcast and visit likesaccounting.com. Again, get a free review of your financial data when you visit likesaccounting.com and the Tech to CEO podcast.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome to this episode of Technician to CEO. I'm your host, Wesley Maria. Today, I have the privilege of being joined by Jonathan Maynard, owner and operator of the Huge Conference, amongst other things. So, Jonathan, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself? I know that you wear a lot of hats and you do acquisitions and a lot of business deals. So maybe just give the listeners a glimpse into your world.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm one of the owners and CEO of the Huge Convention. Like you said, I also own fully three service companies. So I have a pressure washing company, a landscape lighting and Christmas light company, and also a flooring company, epoxy flooring. Oh, nice. And so, yeah, the pressure washing company is now about 7 years old, and the lighting company came shortly after that, a couple years later, and then the flooring company is a little over a year old. I had a maid service, grew and sold that. Also had a kettle corn company, grew and sold that. And then I spend most of my time now just doing acquisition stuff, so consulting on acquisition, also doing acquisitions for myself. Mm-hmm. The three businesses that I own fully all run on them on their own. So I've got leadership teams in place that really just execute the day to day, and I meet with them once a week just to really go over, kind of what the KPIs are and just looking at them. Are they red, green? If they're red, we talk about them. If they're green, thumbs up and way to go. Meet quarterly, do some quarterly planning and then obviously annual planning. So we just kind of figure out where we're going and then, just make sure that the team's executing on the things on a week-to-week basis.
Well, Jonathan, congratulations on, one, selling a company, and then two, diving back into starting three more. I know that the acquisition space is a very interesting space, but let's talk a little bit about your journey from technician to CEO. Obviously, You didn't start off one day and say, hey, I'm going to be CEO today.
Nope. No. So, with the kettle corn company, I never moved into that CEO role. So I was always the owner operator, pulling my hair out. And that's really why I sold it. At the time I really didn't have much, thought about, hiring employees and things like that. I thought, nobody could do it as good as I can. I really had that mentality. And then I sold it and I got bored and I was working in technology. So the entire time I'm working like a 9-to-5 tech job. And I said, well, let me start something else. So I started this maid service and hired maids to actually do the service. I was doing the sales portion of it. And so I'm doing the sales portion and I hired an office manager, kind of grew that company, and really at the same time also started my exterior cleaning company. And at that time I was doing sales and, you know, I was the guy out there doing the washing. So I was washing on nights and weekends, things like that, like a typical person that's trying to juggle like a full-time job and also business. And grew it, hired a couple technicians. So at first I hired a helper. He was coming out with me working, learning the trade. And then I ended up hiring a second technician, sent them out to kind of do their own thing while I was doing sales, having to closely monitor jobs and things like that. But they were able to work So the technicians were able to work during the day while I was working my 9-to-5. I hired a company called Jill's Office to answer the phones for me during the day. And then on the nights, weekends, and things like that, I was doing sales. And then kind of just kept growing it. Then we had one truck, and then we added a second truck, hired another crew. And at that point, it was like, okay, now I'm really needed in this. So I started tapering away from my full-time IT job, moved into a part-time role, and then moved to a consultant. And then finally, I was like, I don't have time to mess with this. I've got to really kind of scale this business. So was able to scale. Now those businesses, like I said, they run on their own. You know, I've got really great leadership in place. You know, we've got really good growth strategy. We're headed towards, you know, within the next, I would say 5 years, we're expected to do about $10 million just in, you know, exterior cleaning. That's really what our vision is. And that's going to be, just in a couple of locations that are here close. We've got a location, here in Fredericksburg, Virginia, and then we've got one that's a little bit south in Ashland, Virginia. So we can service the kind of Richmond metro area. We did try to put a location up in Northern Virginia. That one did not work out. And, you know, look in hindsight, it's because I didn't have the right person up there to actually grow it. So I learned, you know, some lessons there. We lost a little bit of money and got it figured out. We still serve that location, but we serve it from here. And then the part of the growth strategy is, okay, who can we get to actually run that location? Who can we move from up here that knows our ecosystem that can go up there and serve? And it's possible that I'm going to be looking for an acquisition up there. That's probably, I say, 80% chance that's how it's going to have to happen. I've really learned that in order to expand into new areas, it's best if you do an acquisition because you've got somebody that's kind of got their feet in there and you can just acquire and move on from there.
Nice, man. So yeah, it sounds like you've got some really, you know, ambitious plans to grow and really scale your business. One of the interesting questions I get asked a lot is, I know that you're in the consulting space as well. We deal a lot with CEOs. And there's this perception that if I own the business card, then I must own the company or I must own the responsibility that comes with the CEO. When did you realize I am no longer a part-time operator? I am actually a CEO of a business. What did that morning look like? Over a bagel and some coffee, you realized, man, I'm actually a CEO.
Yeah, it was probably just the realization after I had kind of left my tech job and said, okay, this has got to be something. There's a big line between a very expensive hobby or a job that you own. Like a lot of times, and this is what I didn't want to get into. And I've talked to guys, especially now that I've been on the like consulting side of it, it's these guys feel like they just have a job, like they own a job. And they gave up a 40-hour week job to run a business now that's putting them in like 80, 100 hours a week. And yeah. Like, and I'm not making much more money, but it's mine. And I'm like, okay, that's great. But let's move you from, you know, trying to do this, you know, just pulling your hair out stuff. Because trust me, I was there. There's been times, you know, especially when I was growing it, that I would just lay awake in bed and just like worry and try to figure it out. And I tell this story about, you know, just having a panic attack one time, and I'd never had a panic attack. I've always been like even keel person, but it's like all that weight and responsibility finally caught up with me and like punched me in the face. And I was like, okay, something's got to change. And I think at that point, that was a realization that, okay, I'm a CEO now. I have to stop thinking like a technician. I've got to stop thinking like I'm just playing around with this and actually get serious about it.
Yeah, that's a hard realization when you know that it's not just my success or my future that's hinged on this. You know, I'm now responsible for a whole group of families. They're all hinged on my success. So going through this part-time, job where you created a job for yourself part-time and leaving the cattle call business and stuff like that, how have you grown as a leader through this journey of stepping into the role of a CEO?
Yeah, so a lot of growth, and it really is attributed to just going to conventions. Mm-hmm. And I hit shameful plug for the Huge Convention, but before we bought it, I was an attendee. I attended it for several years, mm-hmm. Going to the different locations and just learning from people that, kind of been there, done that. I had a really good stepping stone coming in, working in tech. I was a tech manager, so I managed teams of people. So I kind of knew I had the leadership side I wouldn't say I had it down, because it's way different when they're your employees that are working for you and you're working for an employer and it's just a thing. It's a whole different responsibility. Like you said a second ago, I've got 25, 30 families that I'm responsible for. And it's like, okay, now that's a weight that I never felt as an employee that was just managing people, leading people. And so, you've got that just, I think it's a great responsibility to be able to, help these guys and girls, have careers that are a win-win, where you're not just using them for their labor, that it's a real team effort. And I think, just going through and listening to different folks, I know you guys spoke at the Huge last year, mm-hmm. and you guys talking about just the systems and things like that to help make you a better leader, how to really just hone those skills and just teaching you the things that you don't know, because there's a lot of stuff that may seem intuitive. And then there's a whole realm of things that are just, you have to learn it, and it's better to be taught it than to, like what I did when I first started in management, when I was like 20 years old, and you just go through and you just learn all the bad mistakes, because you just make the mistakes and you end up, getting written up, or you get coached by your boss, and it's like, oh, I didn't know, but they're not teaching you anything. Yeah. So you don't learn until you make a mistake, and then, it is what it is. But yeah.
You know what? I saw an interesting thing the other day. If you can imagine a canyon, it's got this wall on the one side and a wall on the other side. And people that work for us are kind of stuck on this ledge on this left-hand side. And that's just doing tasks, just doing things. And there seems to be this understanding that people have taught themselves that if I get really good at doing this thing, I'm going to bridge over into opportunity side. Mm-hmm. And, like the British say, mind the gap. Is leadership is about stepping into that gap and embracing the challenge of overcoming the challenges. So a lot of times when we help companies, design position portfolios or job descriptions or those types of things for their leadership, is they've got a bunch of tasks and they want to immediately attach opportunity to the tasks. Tasks are just what you get paid for. The overcoming the challenges is, hey, Jonathan, I need you to help me overcome some of these challenges. And then there'll be a bridge to opportunity. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people, they fall victim to living on the one side and always looking across the ravine to the other side and say, oh, I wish I could get there. And very few people actually step into that challenge gap. Mm-hmm. How have you found the leaders in your world step into that gap in between, and how do they move the needle for you in that instance?
So I think the I guess example that comes to mind is Ryan, that runs my coatings company. Mm-hmm. And I hired him as a general manager, and pay him a fair salary to do general manager tasks, just the regular things. And then it was his desire and wanting, and also my kind of positioning it of, okay, we need to grow this. And these are the challenges I have is, recruiting, hiring and training quality technicians. And then also finding different markets that we can go into. What are some really interesting things that we can do to market that may be lower cost? And so he really took it upon himself to, okay, I'm going to go find these things. And he brought me solutions and said, okay, let's do this, this, and this. And now it's like, okay, that's going to be huge because that helps me. And I don't have to think about that. And he's doing the job of the general manager. Yes. But he, instead of thinking like a general manager, he's starting to think like a CEO. He's starting to think like an owner. And now it's like, okay, if we can do this, now you can, get equity in the company. You can earn these things that aren't available to just a regular person that I pay, X amount of dollars to just run the company and things like that. But if you have a problem or an issue, you're not solving that issue yourself, or you're not thinking strategically. Patrick David has a book. It's about chess, basically, in business and chess. And he's talking about the next five moves. I think that's the name of the book. And you look at that and say, okay, hey, what are my next five chess moves that I need to make? And normally an owner is thinking about this, but if you can teach your leaders to think like that, then it's game over. They're going to scale the business for you. They're going to be thinking like that owner. And that's really where you want your leadership team thinking like an owner, not thinking like an employee, because they're going to come up with creative solutions. They're always defending the P&L. They're always looking for opportunities because they want to grow the business, because they know if they grow the business, then their equity grows, their paycheck grows. And it's not, oh, I did more things, can you give me a raise? It's the sky's the limit.
Yeah. Yeah. I think a lot of people still transact with their staff, and they're teaching bad behavior. It's like, oh, if you do this thing, I will pay you. If you do this, and people are motivated by different things. And you mentioned it a little bit earlier, is the success of the business is finding good talent and actually being able to hire them. And that's a common thread. We deal with business owners every single day, and that's the one thing that they all complain about is, where do I find good talent? So overcoming that challenge in of itself is probably the biggest key to success that we've seen. I know a little bit about you. I've spent some time with you. I think a lot of people, and you mentioned it earlier as well, is you start this, you create a job for yourself. Mm-hmm. I swap my 40-hour job to work 24 hours for myself and get the same pay. And you don't really get into that time and money freedom life that's important to you. Some of the unintended consequences of stepping into the CEO role is you start getting alienated from your passion. Because a lot of people are passionate about what they do, and being a CEO is a very lonely journey in of itself. How do you bridge that void within yourself? What does your peer-to-peer network look like? Where do you go to pick your chin up? Because you can't go to your team and say, hey guys, I'm having a bad day today. I need you guys to just float the boat. Yeah, I'm calling in a day sick.
It's all about network. Part of our, the huge convention, our kind of ecosystem is we have this group called AMP, and it's Amplify Mastermind Program. It's a pretty low cost thing, but all it is just networking. We meet together once a quarter. We do a day together, and it's not time intensive. Mm-hmm. We have a Zoom call once a month. But we also have a really cool Slack channel. So if somebody has an issue, or if I have an issue or something like that, then we really have that network of CEOs. So if you're not involved in something like that, I highly suggest it. And also locally, I've got, probably three or four people within my local area that one of them is a competitor, a direct competitor. He owns a power washing company. And I can call him and just be like, hey, because I think we get a little nervous sometimes when we're dealing with competitors because we're like, oh man, he might get my IP or he might, you know, they're trying to steal. No, you know, they're facing the same struggles that you're facing, and you need that person in your corner that, for example, okay. If I had like a couple crews call out in one day, or like if I had four or six technicians quit, now I'm in a situation. I can call him and be like, hey, we need, you know, I need some help. Do you have some bandwidth? You know, what can we do? Or if I have a truck go down or he has a truck go down, he can call me. You know, we always have a spare truck or two. So it's like, I can get you that equipment, you know, for a short time. And we have that spare equipment now just for our own sake. If you have a truck go down, especially, I remember I had an instance years ago where I had a truck burned to the ground, caught fire. Mm-hmm. And it was my soft wash truck. And it was like, well, what do we do? Because I had no network. I had nobody that I could call. So it was like, oh, God, now I have to figure this out myself. So, and it put us in a situation. I got it figured out, of course, you know. But had I had that person locally that I could call, it would have been a completely different situation.
Yeah, being able to build a support network around us, you know, is people think, oh, I cannot speak to my competitor. You know, we coach into another vertical on the home inspection space before, and it's amazing how business owners will rally together because we all know the pain is real. It's not just, you cannot run or operate or think that my business is an island. I have all the answers. One of the things that on this journey from technician to CEO, you know, you mentioned earlier a lot of learning, a lot of developing. One of the things that I've found dealing with business owners is at some point you have to get to grips with your own inadequacies.
Yeah.
And you just have to say, I don't know everything. You know, maybe I need to hire people that are better at it, faster at it, smarter than me. And people, I've seen business owners fall victim to, oh, I am the solution to the problems. And then when their phone rings at 11 o'clock at night, when they're running a night shift, they're like, man, why are you phoning me? It's because you've put on the jacket as a problem solver. That's why I'm phoning you. So how did you overcome that in your business?
It was a slow process. Because I was the go-to guy, you know, years ago. I knew everything on the technical side. I knew everything on the sales and marketing side. And, you know, I think it just took that realization that while, you know, I could probably figure it out, I really used the Dan Sullivan method of who, not how. Who can I hire, not how do I do this? And finding those good people. And, you know, as business owners, we look at it and say, okay, a general manager is going to cost me $100,000 a year, you know, a good one, or whatever it is in your area. You know, it could be $60,000 in your area. It depends. I'm in Northern Virginia, so everything's twice as expensive. But, you know, you look at it and you go, okay, crap, this is going to cost me this much. If you look at it as an expense and not an investment, you've already failed. So, you know, you can't make all your investments at once, you know, because you only have a certain amount of capital. But if you go, okay, hey, I'm going to have to change my lifestyle a little bit, maybe, or change the draw that I'm taking out of the business a little bit so I can pay for something else, then you're already winning, because that person's going to bring their salary. A good general manager is going to bring their salary. And with any like technician, or especially anybody on your leadership team, you want somebody that's been there and done that. You know, when we look for a general manager or a CEO, I'm looking for somebody that has already operated a $5 to $10 million company. I don't want somebody that's operated a $700,000 or $1 million company because they don't know what to do next to get to where they're going.
Yeah.
I want somebody that's been there in the trenches, that knows how to manage mid-level management and really defend a P&L that has got some heft to it, because, you know, anybody can learn it, you know, but you don't want to pay for their learning curve. You want to invest a little bit more up front and then get that person that's been there, done that.
Yeah. It's a much slower journey if you're paying for that leadership development You know, and again, I'm a big fan of homegrown talent. And yes, you know, promote within the company, homegrown talent, always loyalty is one of the things that you have. But at some point is you're going to have to make a leap between what you collectively know as a company and what you need to bring in from the outside. And we've seen a lot of very successful CEOs step down from really high paying jobs because they're not fulfilled anymore. And they want to come work for $1 million, $2 million, $5 million company because they want to take it back to 10 million. That's what drives them. So I think people have this fear that, oh, I can't find good leadership. I can't find good CEOs because they're just going to be expensive and I'm not going to get a return. I think in that we have to calculate the return on investment for ourselves. You were talking about $100,000 position is, yeah, can, if this person costs me $100,000, how are they going to move the needle? You know, and have metrics and checks to see that it's actually doing.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things on this journey to CEO, and you and I have spoken a couple of times, and I'm fortunate to have a conversation with you today because you've engineered your life to be a little bit more free. You know, and apart the acquisitions and the CEOs and this, you've kind of built this life that allows you to do certain things. This journey from technician to CEO, people have this gold medal syndrome. Is, oh, I'm going to work really hard in my weekend job and turn it into a full-time job, and then I'm going to be CEO. And then gold medal syndrome is when they get the gold medal and they're like, okay, well, this is not what I thought it was going to be. I am now CEO. It's very unfulfilling. I am now $1 million business. You know, there was no parade outside. I am now a $5 million business. Nobody phoned me and congratulated me. How do you deal with that constant void of, you know, I'm working really hard and I'm the only one seeing the result. All my people are seeing, all my team are seeing, all the people out there, they're just seeing the work that I do, but they don't see the effort that's put in behind the scenes.
Yeah. That's really your ego messing with you.
Yeah.
And that's tough. I dealt with it. And finally I had to find fulfillment in other places. Like knowing that this is something that is providing jobs to a lot of people. We know our mission, vision, core values. We know what we're doing here. I think my fulfillment is just knowing that that's been created and not, yeah, there wasn't a parade. When we hit $1 million, I think I got, I think my GM texted me when we first hit $1 million years ago, he said, like, oh, we hit $1 million. And I was like, cool. I thought that'd feel better.
Yeah.
It's just different. It was like, okay. And so, you know, I think that we really have to find that fulfillment in other places and just realize that, you know, what you're building and what you're working on is going to be internal fulfillment. You're not going to get a parade. People aren't going to congratulate you. If anything, people are going to look at you and they're going to become either jealous or whatever. But you can't worry about that. That's them. Mm. And because your ego is always saying, you know, what do other people think? You know, and looking for that external validation. And you have to find internal validation. You have to find the things that fire you up, and you have to, I don't know, maybe just if you have that gap, you really have to just look within and just go, okay, don't worry about what other people say, what other people think, and just move on.
Yeah. I'm a big fan of Jordan Peterson, and I was listening to a podcast a little while ago. And he said, the way that we pay for our unearned privilege is with our virtue. And I think a lot of people on this journey, somewhere along the line, for some people, entitlement steps in. For other people, a sense of external recognition steps in. And you know, my coach sent me a thing this week, and that if we're trying to fill these voids within ourselves with external things, there's always this missing piece. Mm-hmm. And you can't rely on these external pieces to always fill the void. So you've got to find fulfillment, you know, and you mentioned it earlier is your inside is what matters, who you are on the inside. You can't look for external validation for an internal motive. The internal motive needs to come, and it needs to be validated within yourself.
Yep.
What advice do you have for people to help change their perspective around, man? And you've probably, I know that you do some work with EOS, as well. These guys that are out there saying, hey, I just want to run a lifestyle business. I just want to pay my bills, pay my boat, go on holiday twice a year, send my kids to school. How do you help those guys change their perspective around, man, there's so much opportunity out there. And, you know, the old saying, it's simple, but it's not easy. And I think because it's so simple, everybody thinks, man, if I just complicate it, then it'll be easy. And I think people they sign up for simple, but they don't realize that it's not easy executing simple.
Yeah. I forgot who said it. But yeah, the greatest sophistication is simplicity.
Yeah.
And I would say the advice is get a vision.
Mm-hmm.
Part of the EOS process is the vision day where we look at a 10-year plan. And I'm sure Berkeley, you guys do the same thing. You have to look down the road.
Mm-hmm.
If you just look at what you want to do next year and go, okay, I'm doing, $1 million this year. I'm doing $500,000 this year. Next year, I want to do $1 million, or next year, I want to do 1.5, whatever the thing is. Okay, that's very short-sighted. What do you want your company to look like? You need an accountability chart right now that is for a $10 million company. And your name right now is going to be in like most of the boxes because you're out there running it. But if you don't have a vision for a company that is way bigger than you are, then you're never going to achieve that. You're never going to accidentally stumble into success like that. You have to look and go, okay, what's possible? And I think even in the, say, like soft wash and window washing industry, that is really now starting to become prevalent. When I started in the industry, maybe there was a few guys that were doing $1 million. There's probably more but you just never heard of them. But on the Facebook groups and at the conventions and stuff, most people are like racking out at like 500 grand, and like somebody doing like 500, 750, a little bit of a baller. And now it's like you can accidentally sneeze now and do $1 million a year, as long as you follow the systems. There's enough stuff out there now between like Bergflow and all these other companies that are really helping guys really scale. But you have to have a vision even larger than that, even larger than the people you see around you. One of my good friends, Tommy Mello, owns a company in Phoenix. Well, he's got many locations. I was sitting in one of his team meetings a few weeks ago, and they're, you got guys calling in from like 20 some odd states, and they're tracking metrics. They do 250 million. They'll do 250 million this year in garage.
Wow.
Yeah. And he was sitting with me. I mean, he was almost like choked up. He's like, I'm going to have a $1 billion company really quickly, because he said, I need a dream big enough that's going to fit all of my employees' dreams inside of it. And if you look at that like a win-win, he's got a book out right now. It's called Elevate, and I should have a copy like really close to me. Ha, you got it. And he really talks about that, that making sure that your employees win, because if your employees win, you win. And he has a vision. I've talked to him several times just about his vision and about what he's thinking. And I'm just like, God, I need to get a new vision.
Yeah.
And you got to get around people like that, that are just like, they're thinking of things that are just completely extraordinary. And if you have that kind of vision, you're going to hit the mark. But if you are short-sighted and you're only thinking about growing by, 10 or 20% next year, but you don't know what you're doing 3, 5, 10 years from now, you're missing the mark.
Yeah. I read an interesting thing. Warren Buffett said, an idiot with a plan can beat a genius without a plan.
Every time.
And, a lot of people have this plan. I just want to get to $1 million business. Today, $1 million business is respectable. But when they get to that million, we've seen a lot of them stall out. You know, they get to that million and they're like, man, we've been here for 4 years. And they kind of lose the passion and the drive. And I think also to our point earlier around retaining staff or getting staff, if you don't have a vision that's compelling enough, it does, why would people come and work for you? You know, I always challenge business owners and when they say, oh, you know, I have a vision. I say, okay, why would you go and work for you? If you were the general manager today, would you apply for the position at your company? Would you work for a boss like you? Would you work for that company? And they're like, yeah, I don't know. And I'm like, well, how do you expect to convince other people to leave a fixed income or leave another opportunity? And it's not about the financial reward, it's about opportunity. And I think a lot of people are still stuck in, oh, I'm transacting time for money. When you can start having opportunity conversations, Mario Andretti, famous Formula One driver, said, if you feel like you're in control, you're not going fast enough. You know, and I always think about that when people have this vision and they're like, oh man, I just want to get here. And I'm like, well, why do you want to put a lid on it? Instead of saying, I want $1 million business, to say, I want to double my business this year. And have an ambitious goal without putting a lid on it. How have you done that in the past? How have you succeeded in stretching beyond your mental means to say, you know what, this is scary. You know, I'm gonna put a number out there that not only scares me, it scares everybody. How have you overcome that?
Yeah, that's tough. There's been, we had our annual planning session for our softwash company late last year. And, you know, you look at that 10-year plan and I was like, 10 years, we're doing, you know, $50 million. Mm. And they were like, and they couldn't even get there from here. They were just like, how are we going to even do that? And I was like, here's how we do it. And you just reverse it and go, okay, we've got to grow. We've got to double our business every year for the next few. And then after that, then you can taper down, because there's a certain point where doubling your business just doesn't work, but you always have to have that perspective of we're going to grow in such a way that it's going to scare our pants off. You've got to, you know, and how did I overcome it? I think it was just letting go, just surrendering and just going, okay, this is what it's supposed to be. Because again, I come up with nothing like new. I'm not a creative person. But you know, one of the things that's always been said is, I lost the quote, but, you've really got to just surrender, let go, and realize that your dream. Oh, the quote was, if you help enough people get what they want, you'll get what you want.
Yeah.
You can't go in and look at like this $50 million. I don't look at it and go, oh, well then I'm going to take home, you know, $5 million a year.
Mm.
Who cares? If we're at $50 million, how many people am I employing? How many executives am I employing? How many people in my community am I impacting? Our purpose, at my softwash company is to be faithful steward of all that's entrusted to us and leave a lasting impact on our employees, our customers, and our community. And that's our purpose. That's why we exist. And at $50 million, I think about the impact that I can have on my employees. At $50 million, you know, healthcare taken care of. This, you know, they get these things, you know, college tuition for you know, kids. We can have scholarships. We can have all these things for our employees that leave a lasting impact. Even at our size, we still have a leadership academy for anybody that wants to be in it in our company. And you know, we give them free books. They get paid to sit down and talk about the books, meet, develop their leadership skills, and as they continue to progress, we pour into them. Because every employee that gets hired, I tell them, I want you to leave here a better person than when you arrived. I want you to be leveled up, not only business-wise, like just a better leader, but we provide a tool called Smart Dollar to every employee, and it costs us, you know? And that tool gives them budgeting tools and things like that so that they can help their personal finances. So they're going to grow personally and professionally.
Yeah, I've learned people buy from people. They don't buy from your business. I don't care what your brand is. I don't care what your color is. People buy from people. End of the day, we're transacting people, skills, knowledge. And when, you know, you made a statement about leadership and leadership development. Leaders are forged. And if you think of a forge, you know, it gets really hot. And when it's white hot, when the pressure is so much, the very first thing that happens when it gets out the forge is you get your ass beaten up. There's a hammer dropping on you when you are you're at your most stretched. That's where leaders are forged. And you either hire those people or you train those people. And I think it's not either or, it's and. I think a lot of people within themselves are like, man, I'm willing to learn and grow and develop, but at some point I don't want to go through the forge anymore. Then you either need to get somebody else that's willing to expand and grow the business, or you're going to be the ceiling of the business.
Yep.
Interesting question. What has been your greatest success throughout, not just business, in your life, Jonathan, as Jonathan Maynard, what has been your greatest success in life?
I think it's just internally, realizing that there is so much more to life than just me. Mm-hmm. I think my greatest success was learning more about myself and about how just every action that I have has a direct impact on people, and then taking that awesome responsibility and using it to the best of my ability. I think it's a realization of that, and literally it's just a realization. I think that's a great accomplishment. Then comes the work, you know, of actually putting that into place. You know, I think that's probably been the biggest thing that I could learn.
Well, that I think that's the hardest lesson to learn in life is it's not what I do. It's not about me. You know, the work is inside. And I think a lot of people want to exhibit external work that I'm working on this, I'm doing the right things, I'm reading the right books. But it's head knowledge, not heart knowledge. So you don't get changed. You know, internally, they don't change. What has been your biggest blunder?
Personal? Just business-wise, personal-wise?
Just Jonathan Maynard, what's your biggest blunder?
Oh, I got it. And it's a tough one. Mm-hmm. Honestly, I would say it was not spending enough time on my family when my kids were young. I have great relationships with my kids now. They're 19, 16, and 14. My 19-year-old actually works in my floor coatings company by choice, not by force. He actually came to me and he was like, hey, I'm graduating high school. I don't want to go to college right now because I have no idea what I want to do. Can I work for you? And I think that was an amazing compliment. And not out of laziness. He's a smart kid, could have went to work anywhere. So I was, humbled. But I think looking back, I could have been so much more purposeful with my children and just spending the time that I needed to spend to develop the relationships, not being put off. I used to be an extremely impatient person. I'm less so today. And I think a lot of that has to do with my greatest success, just learning more about me and really just becoming more, hate to use the word zen, but just more just like balanced and even keel. I've always been even keeled, but just really internally being even keeled. Externally, not a problem. Anybody can put on a face, but you know, having that war that's kind of raging inside of you and being able to go, okay, I've got it settled down now. And being internally, you know, still waters versus just being able to show it on the outside. And I think earlier when my kids were younger, just being impatient, not being the father that I should have been, I think has been my biggest blunder.
Yeah. Well, thanks for sharing that, Jonathan. It's the hardest thing as a dad, you know, and I'm because we can't, as a business owner, you constantly live in the future.
Yeah.
You know, it's not about how successful we are today. It's, oh, when I'm a million, when you get to a million, it's like, oh, when I'm at 2 million. You know, when your kids come to you, it's like, oh, wait until we're a $5 million business, or wait till, you know, I have the CEO in place, or wait till I just start this new business. And we always tend to shift the order of things, because as a CEO, we're constantly living in this future idyllic motion of joy. Oh, yep. When I get there. You know, and I read a beautiful thing, and a lot of people have seen this, and I've really, you know, meditated and contemplated on this. Is on your gravestone, there's the two dates, and there's a little dash, you know. And so I've got this daily reminder for myself and say, okay, I'm living in the dash. That's it.
Yeah.
There's no map. It's that little dash in between. In between that, you get married, you get divorced, your kids grow up. You start a business, you file a business, all these things. Everything happens in that little dash, and there's no handbook, there's no guidebook that'll teach you how to live in the dash. Everything else will prevent you to get to the last date, and we have all the planning things around the previous one, but it's that little dash in between. And that for me is a stark reminder to say, I get to spend time with my kids. I get to invest $100,000 in a leadership position in my company. I get to start another company. I get to run the huge conference or buy into the huge. So changing your mindset from I have to I get to, for me has been, you know, a pivotal point in my life, that when a challenge arrives, it's like, well, I get to overcome this challenge. I get to bridge this gap. I get to have a conversation with Jonathan. Everything viewed through that lens is it puts a different mindset around responsibilities. And then, you know, we tend to fill our lives with these distractions of busyness. Oh, I just need to do this. I just need to do this. I just need nothing. I get to, you know, one of my clients, you know, Megan as well. Megan likes, I was talking to her yesterday and she's like, oh, you are terrible at replying to text messages. And I'm like, on purpose, you know, it's probably not my best thing. Because I'm in coaching calls every day, or at conferences, or at speaking events. So my phone always looks like a Christmas tree. You know, I get back and there's a bunch of stuff happening. I get to not answer my phone because I've engineered my life where I'm not a slave to every time my phone rings.
Yeah. I one of the concepts that I had really adopted is just the thought of, you know, and it sounds so like woo-woo and whatever, but it's the, you know, all we have right now is the present moment. And like you said, business owners, we're always thinking in the future. And I think that we do need to have some future, you know, sight, like I said, vision and things like that. But if we live in the future, we're going to miss the present. And whether it's the past or the future, those are both just thoughts. They don't exist. You know, all we have is what we're doing right at the moment. Now, yeah, you need to be conscious of your past and learn from it. You need to be conscious of your future and have a vision. But if you live in either one, that's where the problem is. You know, if you live in the past, you suffer from depression. If you live in the future, you suffer from anxiety. And if you don't really just hone in at what you're doing right now and make the most out of everything that you're doing as you're doing it, then you're going to miss out on what you're doing, and you're just repeating a cycle. And then now you're going to be depressed because you're living in the past and go, oh, I failed. You know, that was the key for me when it came to my kids. It was like, well, crap, didn't do my best. Did the best with what I had. I can't beat myself up for it. And I can't think about, oh, well, someday I'll do this. Someday I'll get better. It's like, no, dang it. All I have is right now.
Yeah, I get to redesign the future. I get to decide how much time I'm going to spend with them. One of the things that I've read, you know, reading the, being religious and spending time in the Word of God and doing all the things that the people that I surround myself with, is fear and faith requires the same amount of energy. And people find themselves in this fearful state around the future, or they're telling themselves a story about something that might have happened in the past, or a narrative around an experience in the past. Fear and faith requires the same energy, but they cannot occupy the same space. Yeah. And the absence of fear doesn't necessarily mean that you have faith. The absence of guilt doesn't mean that you have a plan. It just means that I've dealt with that. So it, you might move from minus 10 to zero, but just because you're at zero doesn't mean you're at plus 10. So there's quite a big difference between living on the one side and living on the other side. And I think a lot of people teeter on those sides, is they're fearful, and then they find them in this paralytic state where they don't take action. Because as you said, they're worried about what if this happens? What if this goes wrong? You know, here's all the reasons why I failed in the past. Mm-hmm. What? Yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
No, with the fear and faith, only one is productive.
Yes.
Faith is the only thing that's productive. Now, fear without courage is a problem. Mm. It's okay to be afraid of something, but you have to have that faith and courage to move forward. Like you said, inaction loses every time.
Yeah. Where to from here? What advice would you give others that wants to move from this technician to CEO? You know, it's not, hey, get the book, Jonathan Maynard, but how do they move from a technician mindset to step into being a CEO?
It's just making a decision. Mm. Go, okay, I'm going to go do this, and then finding the who that can help you do it.
Mm.
You can't do it by yourself.
Yeah. I think a lot of people, they're like, oh man, and I love the fact that you state it so simply, because a lot of people think, oh man, here comes a 30-minute sermon. You know, Jonathan's going to give us this big elaborate plan. It's, no, it's simple. Mm-hmm. Deal with your inadequacies, realize that you don't have all the answer, hire great people that's going to get you there.
Yeah.
And drive that and motivate that with a vision. Where do you go when you're stuck, and how do you become unstuck?
I find people that have done it before. Mm. I don't search to my lateral peer group. Mm. If I have trouble doing something that I don't know how to do, they're usually good for encouragement, maybe some ideas. But if I need to know how to get to $10 million, I've got to go find the people that have went to 15.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, you know, that's why I love surrounding ourselves with people that have already done it. Not a lot of people, not a bunch of people that all have plans on how to get there.
Yeah.
So, Jonathan, thanks for spending time with me. I'm going to give you, you know, just tell us a little bit about every side. Where can people reach you if they want to check out the conference, if they want to book you for a, you know, a speaking engagement, or to come clean something, or, you know, do an epoxy floor. Where can we get hold of you?
Yeah. So I'm on LinkedIn, just mm-hmm. Jonathan Maynard. I'm there. Facebook, again, Jonathan Maynard. I'm Instagram at I am Jonathan Maynard. So those are my socials. My company is Red Door Pro Wash. If you try to call there, you'll never get me through that direction. But if you do need exterior cleaning in Fredericksburg, Virginia, then we're here to help. Mm-hmm. And Solid Garage Floor Coatings is also our floor coating company. And then Red Door Lighting Company is our exterior lighting company. Also, if you want to get in touch with me directly, just go to company180.com. That's my consulting company. Very simple website, because most of my stuff is word of mouth. I stay way too busy just word of mouth. So don't have to put a lot of marketing effort into that, but you can book a call with me on there. I'm always happy to chat with people. My schedule is tight, but I do make time for people that are serious about moving forward. And when I say serious moving forward, it's not like, hey, you got to pay me to come do a thing. It's not like that. It's just, if you're serious, I will help you if you're serious. Mm. And then our convention is thehugeconvention.com. Tickets are on sale now. It's going to be August 23rd through the 25th in Nashville, Gaylord Opryland. Beautiful place. The tickets are almost free. I mean, it's $189, but I talked to countless people that walk out of there with $10, $15, $20,000 worth of stuff. And then we have one of our vendors that's doing a $100,000 giveaway. Not in cash. Wow. It's a group of different vendors. And it's $100,000 worth of stuff that is absolutely going to change somebody's business. You have to be in person to win. Somebody's going to walk away, and in 2 or 3 years, we're going to be able to look at that business and go, they went from $200,000 to, you know, $2 million, or whatever it is. If they're at $1 million, they're going to go to $10 million. It's going to change the trajectory of somebody's business like you have never seen.
Yeah, Jonathan, thanks for that, man. I mean, if you guys want to check it out, check out thehugeconvention.com and all the other great places and all the other businesses that Jonathan owns. If you guys want to learn, you know, how to run and grow and scale your business, you're welcome to reach out to us. You're welcome to reach out to Jonathan. You know, meet us at Huge Conference. We'll see Jonathan there as well. Jonathan, thanks for spending time, man. I know that your time is precious. If anybody out there is, you know, Jonathan obviously is actively looking to acquire his business. And this is one last point I just want to stop at is your business will grow organically and through sheer force up to a point. And then you enter into growth by acquisition. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think maybe that's a great conversation for us to have next time is how do you grow by acquisition? If you guys want to learn about that or have a business that's for sale or want to buy a business or anything like that, reach out to Jonathan. I know him, you know, having dealt with him in the past. So yeah, thanks, Jonathan. Thank you for spending time with me and sharing your knowledge.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
All right. Have a great day.
Thank you too.